Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This may prove to be a watershed moment in Europe. After yesterday's targeted, chillingly expert attack on the offices of the French satirical journal Charlie Hebdo, simmering social tensions and security challenges across that continent looked ready to boil. Anti-Muslim sentiment, the rise of the far right, the threat of radical Islam, and the return of jihadis from the battlefields of the Middle East, and an open, bloody challenge to free speech, liberty. This hour on Point, the terror attack in Paris and what it means for France and Europe. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see in the streets of Paris, in the shootings, the uproar, the rallies, and tears? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Paris is Angeline Benoit, a reporter for Bloomberg News. Angeline, thank you very much for taking the time today. We all saw the images of what looked like very big rallies around France last night protesting all this death. Are the rallies going on again today, Angeline?
Hello. Yes, so dozens and dozens or hundreds, thousands of people were gathered in Paris and many other French cities during the night. There are more rallies which are going to take place over the weekend as well. The government as well as organizations from all walks of society are calling on citizens to defend the right of free expression.
As we speak, and this of course could change in the course of this day, where does the manhunt stand?
So there's definitely a chase going on. The whole of France is catching its breath as the police is tracking the offenders in the north of Paris. There have been different reports. There are rumors all over the social media. The names of different cities have been talked about, including Villiers-le-Bel. I just came off a call with the town hall of Villiers-le-Bel. They said that they're all shut up in they're all shut into the town hall. They're hearing helicopters overway, but they don't really know what's happening. So we're all waiting for the police to do its work.
Three names have come out. One 18-year-old reportedly has turned himself in. What do we know of these three men?
Well, two of them were actually names which have been known by the police, and one of the suspects has actually served in prison because he was connected to terrorist activities. On the other hand, the third suspect, the youngest one, apparently had nothing to do with the case. So this has raised a lot of questions about why was the French police not able to prevent the terrorist attack from taking place. What government officials have said is that they're actually following and monitoring hundreds of people in France, but it's not necessarily easy to take action against them until they've actually done anything. And also there are many more people to be monitored than there used to be 10 years back, for example.
And what about the security presence on the streets of Paris and other French cities today?
Well, France is now on the highest level of terrorist alert. In the region of Paris, that means that the military has been deployed in several strategic areas like train stations or near shopping malls. There's a really strong security system which has been put into place to try and protect all the areas that need protection. As President François Hollande himself said, that now the priority is to make sure that this type of event doesn't happen again.
Angeline Benoit with Bloomberg News in Paris. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Here is the French president, François Hollande, condemning the shootings, talking with reporters about the attack on the offices of Charlie Hebdo, interpreted here by the BBC.
This is an act of an exceptional barbarism that has just happened here in Paris against a newspaper. A newspaper means free speech against journalists who have always endeavored to show that in France you can operate to defend their ideas.
The editorial offices of Charlie Hebdo, satirical French newspaper described yesterday as a slaughterhouse, and it went on to the street outside. A video posted here on YouTube, the attacker shows two men shooting on a Paris street, shooting a what turned out to be, I guess, a Muslim police officer, Ahmed Merabet, executed essentially by one of the terrorists on the streets as he lay wounded on the ground. And here, crowds on the streets of Paris last night, shouting, calling for, chanting, liberty. Liberty, freedom of expression. Interview with NPR. This is Parisian Adrien Brunetti. He explained why he joined the crowd at the Place de la République Wednesday night.
We are here like to just gather, show our deep respect for the work they have done and for being together. And I'm part of the ones that fear that there will be like stigmatization of Muslim people in France, and I don't want that to happen, so that's why also I'm here tonight.
We're looking at what happened, the bloody slaughter yesterday in Paris and its political ramifications in France and around Europe in this hour. Joining us now from Paris, Christopher Dickey, Paris Bureau Chief and Middle East Regional Editor for The Daily Beast, also author of Securing the City, Inside America's Best Counterterror Force, the NYPD. Interesting backdrop as well to this conversation. Chris Dickey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
Could you just give us your... You've been in Paris for a long time. You know this city and the different sides of its population very, very well. Just your reaction to what happened yesterday.
Well, I think there's some misleading reactions. I think that the outpouring of grief and anger and protest is likely not to have an enduring effect on French society. I think the enduring effect... I hate to say it, but I'm afraid it's going to be mainly negative. I think this is going to make a deeper and deeper cleavage between a suspicious and frightened secular and non-Muslim majority and the Muslim minority in this country. It's unfair, but I think that is exactly the intent of the people who carried out this terrorist act. I think there, some people have written about this over the last couple of days, and I think they're exactly right. I think the intent is not only to strike at Charlie Hebdo or avenge the Prophet or raise the profile of the jihad, but to do what the communists and the Bolsheviks used to call exacerbate the contradictions, make it so it's harder and harder for the opposing factions or the tense, possibly opposing factions to reconcile with each other. And I'm afraid it's going to have that effect. One thing that's getting very little publicity here in France, we've written about it, but is that there over the last 24 hours, there have been attacks on at least three mosques in France. Mm-hmm. Nobody was killed. They were more or less symbolic attacks. But I was in a taxi with a Muslim cab driver who turned to me and says, "Why is nobody reporting this? I saw it on the social media." So all that kind of thing is very, very disturbing. And while it's one wants to think that the posters and the memes on the web that say "Je suis Charlie, je suis policier" will bring people together, and they should, I'm not sure that they will. In fact, I think that the trend in Europe, as you laid out in your introduction, is actually in the opposite direction.
I mean, it is hard not to be deeply unsettled, not to say straight up deeply offended by a straight up attack on a newsroom.
Well, of course, people are offended. People are upset. People are genuinely protesting. 35,000 people were in Place de la République last night, holding up their pens and their placards. And I think their protest and their demonstration was absolutely heartfelt. The question is, where's the enduring impact on society? Will this pull people together the way, for instance, François Hollande, the president, is calling for people to be pulled together, or will it drive them apart? And I think history shows that these kinds of incidents tend to drive people apart, not the reverse. Let's hope that's not the case. I don't want to be a Cassandra here, saying that everything is going to hell, because there certainly are a lot of people with very good and very positive intentions in this country, including a great many Muslims who want to go on living very peaceful and in many cases very secular lives and don't want to be victimized by the anger that exists not really under the surface, but now on the surface in this society. But I think it's going to be difficult.
French political leaders, Marie Le Pen in particular, leader of the French far-right group, the National Front, ready to get right on this. A video released yesterday there blamed radical Islam for the attack on Charlie Hebdo.
Ne pas craindre de dire les mots. Il s'agit d'un attentat terroriste.
She says, we must not be scared of words. This is a terrorist act committed in the name of radical Islam. Denial and hypocrisy are no longer an option. The absolute refusal of Islamic fundamentalism must be proclaimed high and loud by whomever. Life and liberty are among the most precious values. Chris Dickey, in Paris, I mean, we've heard this, the word out of the big crowds in Dresden, in Germany, saying we want to defend Western values here under attack by Islam. And here the French far-right leader ready to go straight to that theme.
Well, that's right. And the question is, the question comes up again and again, is the problem Islam or is the problem a collection of jerks? If I may use the word, mm-hmm. I would actually use a stronger word mm-hmm. if it were not the public airwaves, mm-hmm. Who, in the name of Islam, try and create names for themselves in their own community or among their friends or in the international media by carrying out atrocities. I think that's what it's really about. It's about the jerks carrying out atrocities because they want to project themselves on the world stage, and maybe they imagine that they, by doing so, are defending the faith of Islam or Muslim worshippers around the world. Most of these guys don't know a damn thing about Islam. A lot of them have spent very little time going to the mosque, and there's even less time studying the Quran. There's a famous case of British jihadis going to Syria and ordering Islam for Dummies on Amazon before they went. I mean, this is typical. This is typical. And I think that it's a real shame that people who are Muslim or from Muslim backgrounds would be painted with that brush. But it will happen nonetheless, and that's exactly the kind of game that Marine Le Pen is playing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. French chanting Charlie Charlie, the name of the newspaper, the satirical paper, the site of the slaughter yesterday in Paris. The terrorist attack left 12 dead and many more gravely wounded. We're talking this hour about what it means, where this goes. In 2011, the same paper was firebombed after carrying a caricature of the Prophet Muhammad. Stéphane Charbonnier was killed in yesterday's attack. The editor there, he spoke to the BBC the following week in 2011. Here he is interpreted by the BBC.
This is the act of idiot extremists, and certainly not of all Muslims who live in France. It's a minority which is absolutely not representative that went and carried out this act of violence.
But now he is dead. Manhunt still on for those who did it. In an address to the House of Commons yesterday in England, British Prime Minister David Cameron condemned that attack, talked about the values at stake here.
I know that this House and this country stands united with the French people in our opposition to all forms of terrorism, and we stand squarely for free speech and democracy. And these people will never be able to take us off those values.
They're in Parliament, but in the streets, it can veer in all kinds of directions. In Dresden, Germany, this week, on Monday, thousands gathered to protest what they call the Islamization of Europe. One protester said he wants to keep Germany as it is. BBC interpreting again.
Germany for Germans, he says. No mosques in Germany. No mosques in Dresden.
Christopher Dickey with the Daily Beast joins us from Paris and points out that we've had attacks at three mosques in France just since the shootings, the terrible shootings in Paris yesterday. Chris, please stand by in Paris with us as well from Washington right now. Laure Mandeville, chief U.S. correspondent for the French newspaper Le Figaro. She's covered Europe's Muslim communities extensively. Laure, thank you very much. Welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Just your response to the terrible, terrible killings there yesterday, the terrorism.
Yeah, I think it's a huge shock for all of us, you know, journalists, French people, and many people actually here in the U.S., you know, sending messages of comfort to see what is happening. What I see here is that you have actually colliding worlds and colliding elements in what is happening in this tragical event. You have, on the one hand, an old France which has had, you know, the experience of centuries ago of religious wars and is still scarred, I think, and deeply, you know, coming from these centuries, this idea that we have to really make a strong separation between politics and religion.
And Charlie Hebdo representing this law, I mean, it covers, we're satirizing all religions, really, and very vigorously, including Islam, making this sort of secular assertion of French identity.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, in Stephen Schaub, one can easily recognize, you know, the sort of modern face of Voltaire. It's mm-hmm. the same spirit. Mm-hmm. It's basically using insolence, words and drawings and cartoons to mock any type of fanaticism. And this is very entrenched, you know, in France. I mean, Charlie Hebdo could, of course, shock. It could provoke, but it was using humor. And humor, as I think it was Volinsky who died yesterday, who said that humor is the best way, the shortest path from one human being to another one. So it was actually an extraordinary weapon against the sort of sickening Islamic fanaticism which has emerged, you know, all over the world and which is, you know, hitting us at the heart of our country at the moment.
Chris Dickey, there is this series of books coming out just at the same time, Submission, just coming out in France, yesterday, but it's been talked about for weeks there. Give us a sense of how literary figures have been handling the tension here around this meeting clash of cultures and the fears it's provoking.
Well, I don't think we need to talk about literary figures in general. I think we ought to talk about Submission specifically, the new novel by Michel Houellebecq, which is really scraping all the scabs off some very raw wounds on all these issues. And it was doing that before the Charlie Hebdo killings took place.
And describe the plot he describes. It's futuristic, set in 2020-something.
Sure. The essential situation is it's 2022. There is a Muslim president of France because the Muslims have formed a Muslim Brotherhood party that has allied with the center-right to stop the far-right from taking over the country. All sorts of political compromises have been made. And what the new Muslim president does is to give the foreign affairs and economy ministries to the center-right while he takes over education and those kinds of portfolios that can shape the minds of the people. He starts sending girls back home from school, focusing on only boys in school, starting to impose the Sharia in social affairs, and gradually eating away at the freedoms that people are used, freedom of expression, particularly freedom of thought that people in France are used to having. At the same time, these policies are bearing fruit, lowering unemployment, eliminating unemployment, and solving some social problems. So it's a complicated narrative, but at the end of the day, of course, it's really about the question of how much you're willing to sacrifice your freedom. It's a little bit like a 1984 of Islam.
This is one of the most well-known intellectuals in France. Is his ultimate message different from the far-right Picardy German nationalist in the streets of Dresden?
Well, that's a good question. He says that it's not a message as such, that he's experimenting or playing with the ideas that that are there that need to be explored. You know, obviously he will get a lot of sensational reporting about it. He's on the cover of the Nouvel Observateur, a leading magazine this week. There are posters of him all over town, which now look incredibly ironic. A big picture of Houellebecq, and the legend on the poster says, "I survived all the attacks."
Laura, does this remain a bridgeable breach? We heard tape just at the top of the hour here from a Frenchman in the Place de la République yesterday saying he's worried about the breach with his fellow French who are Muslim, and he doesn't want a breach. Does this remain mendable?
Yeah, I actually this question is absolutely central, and I must say that I agree with Christopher Dickey on his worries about what is going to happen next. You know, you have on the one hand this extraordinary moment of unity of people so shocked that they want to go into the street. They're repeating "I'm Charlie," and that's very good and important. But we are entering a time of storm and a time of challenge and testing for French society, French elites, and everyone in France. You know, how are we going to react? And it is true that under the surface of these, you know, explosion of goodwill and demonstrations in the streets, that I mm-hmm. hope we're going to see. There is a deepening rift in French society. There is a huge polarization. It has been going on for several years, and it has been buried into the sand by the elites, actually, and many journalists who didn't want to address this question. And actually, talking about Welbeck, I think he's doing a very important job, as, you know, Stephen Schaub and others were doing, which is putting your finger on the wound. You cannot just keep on, as we've done up to now, keep on, you know, burying the wound mm-hmm. and pretend it doesn't exist. There are very big questions about, you know, how are we going to accommodate the fact that you have a majority of people secularized in France and a minority which is actually seeing religion in a very different way? Actually, we have a clash of times here, you know, on this planet, between people who don't see religion in the same way. And that's going to be a debate which has to be on the table, and it's going to be a very delicate one, because of course there is the risk of putting the blame on the whole Muslim community, which would be a catastrophe. On the other hand, we have to get the Muslim community stepping into this debate, but stepping in it in a serious way, not just, you know, putting some sentences and then going back to we don't have to deal with mm-hmm. that. I mean, and I was struck by the declaration of Boubacar, the rector of the French main mosque in Paris, who said, actually, I think yesterday, that what is happening is a deafening act of war, declaration of war on freedom and on our country. And I think that the fact
this
that
is a Muslim leader calling the exactly. attack by fundamentalists an attack on the values he's supporting.
Exactly. And there was someone, I think, on NPR earlier this morning, I think someone you interviewed from Causeur, who said that the French and the West in general has to find the magic formula between overreaction and tackling and opening the debate on the issue of extremism. I mean, we cannot allow our papers and our news people and journalists to be killed without having a very strong reaction. And at the same time, we must prevent the kind of acts which are happening, as Christopher Dickey mentioned, in some cities in France, when you have on the mosque of Poitiers deaf to Arabs, which is very worrying. And I'm very afraid of a chain of events which would see, you know, some crazy attacks on mosques, and then some response, and the polarization and clashes. I think this is a real threat, and we have to prevent it.
And this in a country with 7.7%, more or less, Muslim population, the largest Muslim community in Europe. Zach in Nashville, Tennessee. Zach, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Christopher Dickey and Laure Mondeville.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, I think, Tom, that it is an Islamic problem. See, what Christopher was saying about that it's just a bunch of jerks, you know, mm-hmm. maybe looking up, let's say, you know, Islam for dummies and stuff. You can't say that ISIS and Hamas and 9/11 and all of these wars, this declaration of wars that Islam has on the world, is just a bunch of jerks.
Why can't you say that?
Well, when you say jerks, it sounds like individuals, just a gaggle of individuals. But Zach's saying, well, look, there's the Islamic State. There's a big organization.
Wait a minute. First of all, there's well over a billion Muslims. All the people that Zach mentioned amount to what? Maybe 20,000 people? 30,000 people? So what are we talking about? We're not talking about Muslims. We are talking about a large number of really reprehensible people who have a very extreme vision of Islam, but in fact are instrumentalizing their vision of Islam to build up their personal power and prestige, a very old tactic. We've seen it in every faith.
I mean, fair enough, we don't want to smear a billion-plus people, but the
that's exactly what people are doing. Listen, Tom, I think let me just elaborate on something that Laura was saying that I think it's important to understand in the particular European context, but it's greatly exacerbated now. Mm-hmm. That is that Europeans who basically have racist attitudes, those Europeans who basically have racist attitudes towards Arabs and Turks and South Asians who are from Muslim backgrounds, don't want to say, I don't like them because they're brown. I don't like them because of the color of their skin. I don't like them because they come from a different culture. So what do they say? The discourse that has developed over the last 10 years or so in Europe among those people is, I don't like Muslims because they are intolerant, because they don't agree with our values, because they don't accept our values. Now, that debate you can see focused in something like the debate over the burqa or the niqab, the full face covering here in France. French intelligence determined that about 9,000 Muslim women in France wear the niqab. There are about 3 million Muslim women in France. Why do we need a law dealing with that? We need a law because it's pandering to the right wing and saying to the right wing, you see, we're going to stop these Muslims in their tracks.
And maybe paying less attention to the fact that even Muslims who have been in France for 2-3 generations are saying they still face discrimination within...
I think also, let me just put a fine point on it. I'm sure Laura would agree with this. There are a great many more Muslim women in France who wear bikinis than wear burqas.
Sabrina in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Laura, I'll come right to you. Sabrina, you're on.
Hi, Tom. As a Muslim myself living in America, I am heartbroken by what has happened. But more than ever now, I beseech cultural understanding. You know, I read the shootings not only as an attack on profaning Islam, but it's ultimately an attack on profaning the sacred in any creed. It's a backlash against such deep, long-held spiritual trauma. But then I see the same recursive monster on both sides. It's a problem of orthodoxy, be it secular or Islamophobia or spiritual fanaticism. And both sides sensationalize, both sides polarize expression. Both are so theatrical. They're so calculated in their cruelty. And here's the issue. If the secular persecutes believers, believers will regressively and reflexively continue to respond. And to stop this regressive violence, each side needs to address the other in terms of the language of the other, the language that the other can understand.
But Sabrina, what do you say to a French editor who says this secular tradition is central to my French identity? I'm going to defend it on the cover of my magazine.
Absolutely. That's what I'm trying to say, that as a Muslim, I can wholeheartedly say no divinity requires human sacrifices to make itself sacred. And the right to speak and the right to pray need not be mutually exclusive. What was done is absolutely wrong. But at the same time, the backlash against Muslims, it's also intolerable.
Sabrina, I so appreciate your call. Laura, I'll come to you after a break. Chris, I've just got you for half a minute more. Where do we look here for a sign of hope in the midst of all this blood and right now, just kind of despair?
Well, you know, I think Europe does have common... People in Europe, at the end of the day, often do prove that they have common sense. But I think that people have to step back and quit saying this is all just about Islam and have to understand that it's in a very complicated social, political, and religious environment. Let me just give you two quick examples. It is illegal... I'm not saying anybody should deny the Holocaust, but it is illegal to deny the Holocaust... It's illegal to deny the Armenian Holocaust. So where's the freedom of speech there? Has anybody suggested it should be illegal to attack Muhammad? No.
Christopher Dickey, Paris Bureau Chief for the Daily Beast, thank you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the terrorist attack, the slaughter in France yesterday, and what it means, where it goes. Here was John Kerry at a press conference yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State, condemning the attack in Paris.
They may wield weapons, but we in France and in the United States share a commitment to those who wield something that is far more powerful. Not just a pen, but a pen that represents an instrument of freedom. Not fear.
Freedom, not fear, but there are many passions here, and they go in some disturbing directions. Laura Mandeville is with us, chief U.S. correspondent for the French paper Le Figaro. She's extensively covered Europe's Muslim communities. And Laura, you heard a lot there off mic at the end of our last segment. I want you to jump in. Christopher's pretty worried about where this is going, but he sees hypocrisy in looking, you know, too one-dimensionally at the Muslim community here.
Yeah, but I don't totally agree with Christopher, frankly, on mm-hmm. the question of you know, him saying that, you know, it's just a bunch of jerks and the question is mm-hmm. not Islam. Because I think that precisely there is a fight for the definition of Islam. And this fight is being led by the a very motivated radical group which has connection all over Europe, coming from, you know, different parts of the Middle East and Maghreb, and they have connection in Europe, and they are leading their fight, and their aim is to divide the European society and divide the French society, divide the Muslims, create a rift between the Muslim minority and France. So it is about Islam, and it's about how the also about how the Muslim community is gonna react to this these attempts, and that's why I can't also agree with what he says about, you know, the 9,000 women who are wearing niqab, and why would it need a law in mm-hmm. France about the niqab. I think that the French is a secular society, not in the same sense as the Americans. I mean, mm-hmm. as you know, the American separation of church and politics was that you wanted to protect religion and religious people from the influence of the state. Mm. In France, after having, you know, wars of religion and being the eldest sister of the Catholic Church for so many centuries, we wanted after the revolution to protect the state from the influence of religion. So mm-hmm. it's a totally different approach. And when we say we don't want the veil, that's because the French understand that there is a fight of the radicals, and they don't want to allow. If you start giving up, where do you stop? I mean, there is a huge debate in France now on many details of daily life, which worries the French extremely. For instance, should we have separate swimming pools for women and for men? This is a question which is being raised in big cities like Lille, and the French women are asking,
because of a Muslim community
why?
Request for separation?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in a society as Christian and religious as the U.S., mm-hmm. Where you have an extremely small Muslim minority of, I think, of 0.8%, how you would react if you had actually 10% of the population Muslim and similar question arising. I think the discourse in the U.S. would be totally different. And I must say that I didn't agree when, for instance, the New York Times, when we had this debate on the veil and on the law on the niqab, was talking about France as an illiberal country. I think
illiberal.
It's just
mm-hmm.
illiberal country. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a misunderstanding of what is going on. For years, I think the U.S. have had a very naive interpretation of what was going on in Europe in terms of the potential impact, you know, cultural impact of these debates. And I'm not saying that I'm absolutely in favor of finding, as I said earlier, this magical formula where we're going to find some kind of way to defend our values without putting the Muslim community in a bad place. But they have also to understand that the French laws are the French laws, and the French laws are not Muslims' laws. You know, in France, French laws applies, not Muslim laws. And this is, I think, a very painful debate, but it has to happen in the open. And when someone is not happy with, like this woman who talked on your show,
yes,
about Charlie Hebdo, I mean, let's sue Charlie Hebdo. I think the Catholic Church has sued in the last few years Charlie Hebdo 14 times for caricatures that they didn't like. But there is no way we can sort of give in on the who is going to define what is acceptable and what is not.
It's certainly not only Islamic figures caricatured, satirized on the cover of Charlie Hebdo. You've got the Pope there, you've got Jewish rabbis there, you've got Jesus on the cross on the cover of the magazine. It has been satirizing across religious boundaries. Laura Mandeville, chief U.S. correspondent for the French paper Le Figaro, please stand by in Washington. I want to reach quite far afield now, but to someone who's writing very interestingly about Europe's challenge at this moment. We go to Mumbai, India, and Yasha Munk teaches political science at Harvard, a fellow at the New America Foundation, deeply studied in left and right-wing populism in Europe, a German citizen. Yasha Munk in Mumbai, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom.
We are reading your essay in Slate, a strong essay. The headline is Europe's Brutal Truth. What's the brutal truth you're pointing to, Yasha?
Well, I think the brutal truth in some ways has been reflected in this conversation today, actually. And I think there's a temptation in the debate in Europe to polarize into so-called critics of Islam and so-called defenders of Islam. And I think each of these positions ends up being a little simplistic, a little black and white.
I think Laura has broken down that black and white pretty well in the last 5 minutes, but have at it.
Well, I'll tell you why. So I think the people who sort of style themselves as opponents of Islam point to, you know, a small number of radical Muslims who, you know, are radicalized by totalitarian ideology and go out and, you know, perpetrate these terrorist attacks. And from this tiny, tiny minority, they want to paint a picture of what Islam is like, of what ordinary Muslims are like. And they do that for a very specific political purpose. They claim to be defenders of liberalism, and they're I completely agree with what was said earlier. They claim to be defenders of liberalism. They claim to be defenders of universal values, like tolerance and so on. But what they're actually saying, I think, is closer to what Law was saying, which is French laws are French laws, but not Muslim laws. And what that means is we're here in France, we're here in Germany, so we get to decide what our society looks like. We get to decide that, yes, of course it so happens that we have a public holiday in France on the day of Christmas, but no, it would be an imposition of Islam. It would be a kind of submission to Islam, as Michel Welbeck might put it, if we also had a holiday for Eid. And I think what that ultimately boils down to is a liberal fig leaf to justify just a set of cultural preferences that we want to remain how we've always been and not make adequate space for Muslims in our society. Now, on the other side, I think there's a danger as well. On the other side, people start to say, look, there's all of this Islamophobia going on, these kind of protests that we've seen in Germany, the success of Front National in France. And so the right response is to say that we shouldn't criticize Islam at all, and we should completely blind ourselves to the fact that what happened yesterday in Paris, what is happening with ISIS, is of course something that is in some ways inspired by Islam, in the same way in which the Crusades were in some way inspired by Christianity. It doesn't represent all that Islam is, but I think the people who then style themselves as defenders of Islam start to say we shouldn't criticize Islam at all and we should deny that that has anything to do with Islam. And the danger that comes out of that is that we sort of split the difference in a very dangerous way. We sort of end up being a little Islamophobic and a little unwilling to really call out Islamic terrorism. And that's not the right kind of middle point between these two positions.
Yasha, Laura says, look, the secular tradition is very deep in France. It was hard won through war, religious war, and after, and we want to hang on to it. Is that wrong?
I happen to think that it is, and I've thought a lot about what the French call laïcité, And so the claim of a French is, look, the way that Americans think about religion is that the state shouldn't endorse religion anyway, right? What is wrong is for some kind of state agency to endorse Christianity over another religion. But the state allows people to live their religion very prominently and very publicly. It's okay to walk around the streets of New York with a prominent religious symbol, to try and proselytize in a very public manner. All of those things are okay. And the French claim is, we don't think that secularism should be like this. We think that the public space should be emptied of secularism. But I think that that is simply illegitimate. In any kind of political order, you have to ask yourself, what is the state justified in forbidding? When is it permissible for the state to tell its citizens what to do and what not to do? And I think what's going on in Europe at the moment is that it's perfectly fine to walk around with a cross. I'm Jewish. It's perfectly fine to walk around with a kippah, but if you have a preference for covering your face, you're not allowed to do that. Now, I think it's a tragedy that some women choose to cover their faces, or in certain circumstances are forced to cover their faces by male relatives. But I don't think that the state can make that choice for people either. I don't think the state is justified in putting people ultimately in prison because they say, I don't want other people.
What about dividing swimming pools into male and female pools because of religious sensitivity?
So often these kinds of debates could have a very pragmatic solution, and they get blown up into these big questions of principle.
Well, pragmatic. Wait, that sounds like, but it sounds like, I don't know what even that means. You're either in one pool or you're not.
No, because the very simple solution is on one morning a week to have some opening hours that are sex-segregated. So, you know, on every Tuesday morning, you only have women who can go to a swimming pool, and the rest of the week, it's fine. It's not an ideal solution. It's not one that I particularly like, but it is a lot better than to make it out to be a question of the defense of the republic and the defense of secularism as a fig leaf for what it really is, which is to say we want to keep our society the way it's always been. Here's the wider stakes. Europe has a lot of immigrants that have come over the last 50 years. And since a lot of European countries are losing population and fast, they will have to have more immigration in order to sustain the welfare states. So Europe, in essence, has a relatively straightforward choice. We can either say, we want to be the way we've always been. We want to be essentially a monocultural, monoethnic set of countries, so that what it is to be a true Frenchman is to look a particular way, and to either be Christian or descend from Christians, and to speak a particular way. Or we can say, no, we are a society that has people who look in many different ways, who are able to live out their culture and their religion in a public manner, but who obviously have to respect the laws of the society that are neutral.
Yashimon, hold the thought right there. I've been keeping our callers so long here. I want to get a couple more in. Raymond in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Raymond, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I don't know, but I stand up for free speech all the time. But this seems to me to be, what if the cartoonist at the New York Times tomorrow decides to draw a picture of the New York police officer wearing a KKK hood? Of course, the editor would say, right now is not a good time to put out a cartoon like this. And imagine you're a young Muslim child in Europe, and every day in the news, you are seeing the Prophet Muhammad satirized, mocked. I mean, put yourself in a moderate Muslim's shoes. In a way, this is like yelling fire in a theater when there is no fire, and I wonder if the cartoonist would draw the same cartoon again, knowing it would put his co-workers' lives in danger. Can't they just hold off on this hate?
What about freedom of speech? What about the freedom to satirize? You know, should Saturday Night Live pull in its horns? Should the Comedy Central not go after things that may be sacred cows in some quarters? But I take I understand the impulse that you're describing there, Raymond. Let me get one more, if I may. Frederick in Elkader, Iowa. Frederick, you're on. Frederick.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm of French Algerian descent, and I would like to express my outrage at this minute minority that hijacks my faith. My heart sinks each time I hear of an event, and I hope that it's not a Muslim and it's not especially when it's in France, that it's not somebody of Algerian descent. But I mourn the death of the of everybody at Charlie Hebdo, and even though sometimes I don't agree with their views, I respect and I would defend with my life their right to express it. But I think the flip side of the debate as well is that these murderous idiots keep saying that they're inspired by Abu Ghraib, they're inspired by our moral failures. I think it's really important for us to stick to our moral high ground and act with it. Do not torture people and things like that.
Frederic, our time is short. I appreciate your call. Laura, last word to you here. In a way, Yasha is saying, France, you're going to have to loosen your definition of Frenchness to accommodate the fullness of your population, the people in France. What do you say, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I don't agree. I mean, it's very important to have this debate, and I would be happy to have it. But when he talks about the liberal fig leaf, I mean, he's just talking about, I mean, how we defined our freedom. I mean, and I don't find offensive personally when Stephen Sharp put on the first page of Charlie Hebdo the prophet being ready to get beheaded and saying to
by an Islamic State
jihadist and telling him, "Hey, idiot, I'm the prophet." And the other one says, "Shut up, infidel." And it's just mocking fanaticism. It's not mocking the prophet, actually. So I mean, we don't want to become a Babel Tower. He says, you know, you have to change the definition of Frenchness. But we've seen a lot of countries, experiencing the community model like the Netherlands and waking up that they couldn't find anymore, you know, the thread, the national thread. So the debate should be on. It's not over.
It's on today. Laura Mandeville, Chief US Correspondent for Le Figaro. Thank you very much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Yasha Monk, you've put your finger on a chasm here that's by no means closed. I hope we can speak again. Yasha Monk at Harvard and the New America Foundation in Mumbai, India today. Thank you, Yasha.
Thank you, Tom.
This is On Point.